Hello, and welcome back to Chronicles, where today we're going to be discussing part two of the Nibelungenlied. In part one, as many of you will remember, if you're not jumping into part two without watching part one, in which case, go back, do as you're told, we're going to be basically discussing the fallout from everything that happened there. Of course, we had the great quest, the great warrior, the great king, Siegfried of the Netherlands, Lord of the Nibelungs. He was murdered by Hagen, the uncle and chief advisor of Gunther, the king of Burgundy. And in all of this, this left his wife, Siegfried's wife, Kriemhild, in a place of total sorrow, grief, and looking for means to gain revenge for what she's been forced to suffer. And so let's just head straight into what goes on in the second part, shall we? Though the years pass, Kriemhild's grief remains. Her days were filled only with ruminations of sorrow and vengeance. Far beyond the borders of Burgundy, in the kingdom of Hungary, King Etzel, a pagan lord of great renown, seeks a new wife. He discusses his options with his trusted vassal, Rüdiger of Pochlan. Kriemhild's beauty remains well known, and she is still able to bear children. What's more, the Burgundians are revered for their strength and honour, and would make fine allies. And Etzel respected her late husband, the gallant Siegfried. So, Rüdiger is sent as an emissary to the court of King Gunther. Journeying through Vienna, news of their coming arrived in Burgundy sooner than their company. Upon their arrival, Gunther summons Hagen, and marks out Rüdiger for his king. The brave Huns are received with all honour. Rüdiger is introduced to King Gunther and his many knights, Gernot, Gisler, Dankwart, and Volker. He then delivers his lord's message. He recounts the untimely passing of Etzel's previous wife, and the desolation that her absence has placed in his heart, and in those of his subjects. I will tell you more of my dear lord's message, seeing in what a wretched plight the death of Helch has left him. My sovereign was informed that Lord Siegfried had died, leaving Kriemhild a widow. If that is how matters stand, and if she may do it with your blessing, she shall go crowned before Etzel's warriors. This my lord bade me tell you. King Gunther requests 3 days to consider the offer, and to seek Kriemhild's own decision on the matter. Amongst Gunther's advisers, all but Hagen are in favour of it. Gunther deeply wishes Kriemhild to accept the marriage proposal, in part from guilt at the hand he played in Siegfried's murder, but also because it pains him to see his sister suffer so undeservedly. But Hagen is unmoved, and already weary of Etzel, having been his prisoner once before. Gisler presses him to approve the match, so that he may atone for the evil he did to her. But Hagen is firm. I shall tell you what I plainly foresee. If Etzel marries her and she lives long enough, she will do us great harm yet. However she contrives it, when all is said, she will have many fine men at her command. Where Gunther sees joy, Hagen sees retribution, and he is greatly vexed by Gunther's consent to the marriage. The news is brought to Kriemhild that she may move on and have another chance at happiness, that her days need no longer be defined by sorrow. But Kriemhild refuses the offer outright. But Rüdiger is brought to her as Etzel's envoy and speaks of his sovereign's many qualities and asks her, what else but tender affection can help one over one's sorrow? Your life with Etzel will be so splendid, if matters go so far, that it will give you endless delights. She asks that he return tomorrow, and then he shall have his answer. Kriemhild is deeply conflicted. Not only is she still loyal to Siegfried's memory, but she's conscious that her beauty is diminishing, and the thought of marrying a pagan is a grave affront to her faith in God. None can convince her. Rüdiger returns the next day and speaks with the lady privately, and he tells her that he would make amends to her for any wrong that should befall her, at which her great sorrow begins to abate. She tells Rüdiger to swear an oath that he will avenge her against any who had sought to harm her. to which he solemnly swears. And he and his vassals swear to serve her loyally, and to never deny her anything, providing it was to her honour. And he gave her his hand on it. So it is that Kriemhild makes ready to depart for her new life in Hungary. But Hagen is aware that she leaves with great enmity towards him. During their journey, Rüdiger introduces Kriemhild to his wife, Gotland, who greets the new queen with great kindness. Neither had any foreboding of what was to happen. After staying in many towns along their route, they arrive at Thurn on the Danube River. There, she receives King Etzel kindly with a kiss. There are 17 days of celebrations, and now the whole time that Kriemhild stood beside Etzel, the young blades were engaged on what they still do today. Christian and pagan warriors rode many fine jousts, each in his own style. After many years as consort to the king, Kriemhild receives many marks of loyal submission and makes royal gifts of gold and silver, all that she had brought over the Rhine with her to Hungary. With the passage of time, all the king's relations too, and all his vassals become her devoted servants. Queen Helch never wielded such power over them as Kriemhild enjoys till the day of her death. The royal couple have a son named Ortlieb, and Kriemhild insists on his baptism, so that he may one day rule as a gracious Christian sovereign. Alas, despite all the reasons for rekindled joy, Kriemhild still broods on the many wrongs that have been done to her at home, and all the honours that had been hers in Nibelungenland. Night and day she is oppressed by the memories of how, through no fault of her own, she has been brought to the point of having to wed a heathen, and that it was Hagen and Gunther who had brought it to pass. With the certain affection of her king's vassals, and the unshakable torment of her heart, Kriemhild decides that it is time for her to seek revenge on her family. Speaking to Etzel, she implores him to invite her kin from Burgundy to his court. The emissaries are then brought before her, and she insists that, other than her elderly mother, all of her family should make the journey to see her, particularly Hagen. When they arrive in Burgundy with this invitation, King Gunther and his vassals deliberate upon this offer. All speak in favour, except Hagen. "You are bent on your own destruction," he said to the king in private. "You know what we have done. We must always go in fear of Kriemhild, for I killed her husband with my own hand. How then should we ever dare to ride into Edsel's country?" Gunther is persuaded that his sister has put her anger behind her, and that their visit can only serve to strengthen their reconciliation. It is a fatal error. Hagen's wisdom is overruled, and he sets out with his king, and many of the valiant warriors that we have met throughout the tale, Dankwart, Gisler, and Volker, amongst others. Though he counselled against the journey, Hagen still tries his best to ensure the safety of his king, bringing with the company 1,000 splendid knights. Gunther has one last night with Queen Brunhilde, and at dawn, the Nibelungs begin to travel towards Hungary, towards doom. Coming to the mighty Danube, Hagen encounters 3 Nixies. Startled, they attempt to flee, but Hagen takes their clothes from them, until the Nixies barter them back, in exchange for information. Hagen returns their clothes, and he is told by one of the water sprites, "You can ride with confidence to Etzel's country. I pledge you my word of honour that no warriors ever travelled to any kingdom to win such glory. Rest assured of it." But then a second speaks. "Let me warn you, Hagen, son of Aldrian. My cousin lied to you for the sake of her clothes. If you ever get to Hungary, you will be sadly disappointed. Turn back. There is still time. For, bold knights, you have been invited to Etzel's country in order that you shall die there. All who ride to that land have linked their hands with death." The Nixie ominously laments that the only survivor will be the king's chaplain. Hagen then goes to find a ferryman, so that the Burgundian company can cross the river. But after following the Nixie's advice and gaining access to a ferry by killing its man and sailing across, Hagen throws the chaplain overboard in an attempt to drown him. But despite Hagen's best efforts, the chaplain swims back to the bank, very much alive. He then realizes the dark truth of Lennoxy's warnings. He cannot change the decree of fate and resolves to press on with the hope that all his company may meet an heroic end. Still on the road, King Gunther's host arrives at Poshlan, where they meet the noble Margrave, Rudiger. Ever the consummate example of chivalry, Rudiger treats them with great hospitality, even so far as to agreeing to have his daughter marry King Gisla. Gifts, meals, and revelry define their numbered days in Poshlan, but they must now ride once more to meet with Kriemhild. When the Burgundians arrived in Hungary, old Hildebrand came to hear of it, and he told his master, Lord Dietrich, who was very sorry to learn it, but he asked him to give the gallant knights a warm welcome. King Dietrich is in exile at Etzel's court, and all too aware of the fraught tensions that these new arrivals will bring. He says unto them, Welcome you lords, Gunther and Gisla, Gurno and Hagen. Are you not aware that Kriemhild still weeps bitterly for the hero of Nibelungen land? Upon finally meeting Kriemhild after these many long years, the reunion is tense. Welcome to whomever you are, welcome, she said. But I shall not greet you for any love between you and me. Tell me what you bring me from Worms beyond the Rhine, that you should be so very welcome to me. Tell me further, what have you done with the treasure of the Nibelungs? It was mine, as you well know. That is what you should bring me here to Etzel's country. Hagen is forthright, telling her that all he brings are his weapons and protections. When Kriemhild tries to have him relieved of his weapons, so that he may enter the great hall, Hagen resists. Dietrich manages to delay the queen's fury, but she is unyielding. She manipulates some 60 men with her grief and demands they kill Hagen for her. But, seeing that her nemesis is in the company of strong Volkner, she reinforces her numbers with several hundred more. Then, wearing her crown, she publicly upbraids Hagen in front of her loyal knights. Why did you do a deed for which you have earned my hatred? You slew Siegfried, my dear husband, for which I shall have cause to weep till the end of my days. Hagen responds by attesting to his guilt for all to witness. I am that same Hagen who slew Siegfried the doughty warrior. How dearly he had to pay for Lady Kriemhild's maligning of fair Brunhild. There is no denying it, mighty queen. I bear the entire guilt of your ruinous loss. But none of Kriemhild's knights will avenge her. They well know the prowess and renown of Hagen and Volker the minstrel. The Nibelungs survived this encounter. Whatever do they hold their weapons close at hand. The foreigners then meet the Hungarian king and are welcomed with all the hospitality that their nobility and gratitude should warrant. The day drew to an end, the night came on, and the travel-weary knights wondered anxiously when they could go to bed and rest themselves. King Etzel grants them permission to leave, and Gunther and his host retire. Hagen and Volker decide to keep watch for the night. It proves to be a well-reasoned precaution, as many of Kriemhild's knights had been intent on cravenly butchering their guests in the sleep. The Nibelungs live to see another dawn. The morning comes, and the Nibelungs adorn themselves with their helms, and King Etzel, ignorant of the conspiracy and hate simmering in his halls, allows the Nibelungs to wear their garments of war, after his guests brush it off as simply their tradition. Later that morning, there is a joust, and Volker accidentally kills his Hunnish opponent. Swords are drawn, tempers are sharp, and it seems certain that a bloody melee will erupt. When King Etzel intervenes, ordering his men to stand down, he truthfully insists on the killing being an accident, and all the swords are sheathed as they all return to the palace. Despite her desperate efforts, Kriemhild is unable to instigate the slaughter of her foes. She turns to Dietrich and pleads with him to be her sword of vengeance, but the gallant king will not lower himself to such base butchery. But, turning to Lord Brodelin, she finds a warrior more receptive to her bloodlust, after she offers him gold, silver, and a bride of fair countenance. Hearing what the reward was to be, Brodelin fancied he would win the charming woman by force of arms, but in fact, as a result, he had to lose his life. Kriemhild's old grief was embedded deep in her heart. Since there was no beginning the battle in any other way, she had Etzel's son carried to the board. How could a woman ever do a more dreadful thing in pursuance of her revenge? Young Ortlieb is brought to the hall, and whilst the two races drink, Baudelin and his forces attack brave Dankwart in the squire's quarters. He repays Baudelin by cleaving his head from his body. Then, fighting his way to the main hall, the spectators are shocked by the sight of Dankwart, wounded and bloody. He tells Hagen and the men of the hall of what has just happened, and Hagen declares that Kriemhild's grievances have caused what is to come. He drinks to the memory of the dead, and then, unsheathing his sword in wrath, decapitates the infant Ortlieb as his head flies into Kriemhild's lap. The hall becomes a venue for frenzied slaughter. As battle rages, Volker leaps to the aid of Dankwart, and Hagen slowly closes on Kriemhild. She screams for Dietrich to save her, the Lord of Verona bellows, and the slaughter pauses as he and King Gunther engage in diplomacy. It ends with Dietrich, Rüdiger, and their third parties leaving the hall in peace, as the Nibelungs cleanse the palace of their enemies. Kriemhild and Etzel, who had both been escorted safely outside, can do nothing but listen to the muting screams. All of Kriemhild's enemies remain standing, and Gisla advises them to have the corpses thrown from the hall. They followed this advice and carried 7,000 bodies to the door and threw them out. These fell at the foot of the stair before the hall, and their relations raised a most pitiful clamour at the sight of it. For some of these thrown out were not so seriously wounded that careful nursing could not have healed them, but they were nevertheless killed by the fall, and it was this that their kinsmen were lamenting, as well they might. Kriemhild sends up a champion to slay Hagen, but he is merely greeted with his own demise. Legions are then sent forth by the queen. What never-ending numbers of brave knights perished at their feet. It was in midsummer when this great slaughter took place, and Lady Kriemhild avenged her mortal wrongs on her nearest kinsmen and on many others, so that King Etzel never knew happiness again. Soon, Kriemhild gives word for the hall to be burned down. The ash and smoke swirls about the beleaguered Nibelungs. So dry were their throats and so exhausted were their bodies that the Nibelungs are reduced to drinking the blood of their fallen foes so that they might endure. Then, in the greatest moment of tragedy, Rüdiger is ordered to fight. A man of unimpeachable morals, resigned to Kriemhild's pyre of vengeance. Caught between contradictory oaths, Rüdiger parleys with the Nibelungs to no avail. On that day, Rüdiger gave every proof in action that he was a bold and illustrious hero. Both Gernot and Rüdiger perish, brought down by one another. The loss of Rüdiger draws old Hildebrand and Dietrich's men into the fray. The Nibelungs begin to fall. First Volker, then Dankwart, then Gisla. Only Gunther and Hagen remain. Finally, Dietrich goes forth into the breach and captures the two survivors. At long last, after her great suffering, Etzel's queen is happy. Dietrich beseeches Kriemhild to let her enemies live. Hagen is taken to a cell, and Gunther to another. Kriemhild visits Hagen and orders him to divulge the location of her treasure. Your words are wasted, most noble queen. I have sworn as long as any lord of mine remains alive, never to reveal the treasure or yield it to anyone. I shall make an end, cried the noble lady, and she commanded them to take her brother's life. They struck off his head, and she carried it to Hagen by the hair. Great was the grief it gave him. But Hagen had deceived her. There was no oath. He had known that Gunther would have revealed the location of the treasure, but now it is known only by Hagen and God. Incensed, Kriemhild takes Hagen's sword. It is Balmung, the sword of Siegfried, and with it she avenges her long-deceased lord and smites off Hagen's head. Etzel, Dietrich, and Hildebrand are devastated at seeing such a mighty man of honour murdered by a woman's hand. Hildebrand, leaping forward at Kriemhild in fury, strikes the queen with a heavy swing of his sword. She winced in dread of Hildebrand, but what could her loud shrieks avail her? There lay the bodies of all that were doomed to die. The noble lady was hewn to pieces. Dietrich and Etzel began to weep, and deeply they lamented both kinsmen and vassals. The story ends here. Such was the Nibelung's last stand.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.